You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 13th, 2015, and it's Earthbound week again, this time with a big heaping of poo.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Jusser.
I'm George Albor.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It's a serious but not humorless conversation about video games and journey through Earthbound.
This is episode 4 of our Earthbound debrief.
God damn.
This is now the longest debrief we've ever done.
I mean, does The Walking Dead count? Like,
oh, that's a good point. Yeah, because we have like 6 episodes of Walking Dead under our belt.
But still, the single game, like, this is pretty nuts.
Single Earthbound game, yeah.
We have been dividing up Earthbound kind of piecemeal and then taking it in chunks and debriefing.
And I'm pretty sure that's how Earthbound was meant to be consumed because there's so much weird, bizarre diversity in this game.
I was speedrunning,
but, I am consistently surprised.
Yeah. So what we do is, you know, there's no real two ways about it. This is going to be a spoiler-laden podcast. The sections that we're going to talk about in this episode start when you make it to Summers, the lovely beach resort of Earthbound, and end after the fire dungeon. I forget what they call it. It's like the fire cave or something
fire
like
spring.
That.
Fire spring.
Fire spring. Where one of the sanctuary locations is.
Yes.
Theoretically the last sanctuary location.
Theoretically the last sanctuary.
But we'll talk about that in just a minute. So before we go too explicitly into spoilers, I feel like this may have been maybe the second most challenging chunk.
Yes.
What do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. There was a particular section in this part of the game where I thought I was going to have to grind too much.
Mm.
So I let everyone die, and I just ran away from every single fight. And I started getting really good at, I call it the door tactic.
Oh, going back and forth.
You go back and forth until you get a spawn that you're like, I think I can take those guys.
Yeah, that's actually a super interesting part of this game, where like in Chrono Trigger, the enemies are always in a set point, in a set position on the map. But with Earthbound, it's not random encounters, so you can see where the enemies are, but the enemies randomly spawn, so you can cheese. You're like, okay, I'm just going to go back and forth until I like the layout.
Yeah, and not just that, their numbers change on the spawn.
Yep.
So there are times when it's like, I don't think I can take 3 guys, but I can take 1 guy.
Yep.
And there are certain types of enemies where if there are 2 of them, it becomes much harder.
Oh, yeah.
Because
they complement each other.
Yeah, they'll shield each other or they'll complement each other. And there are other times, even in Fire Spring is a good example. There's those lava guys in that section. There's Breeze. I got Psy Freeze all day.
Yeah.
But if 2 Psycho men show up, that's brutally difficult.
Fuck those Psycho guys.
The Psycho guys are fucking worse.
I mean, I think, do you think that the first part was maybe the hardest, or do you think
I think the first part was the hardest, because you don't have as many characters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right off the bat, you also don't have access to, like, a Cup of Life Noodles or Horns of Life. Like, there's no res. You have no Phoenix down.
Yep.
So in this section, there are those moments when it's like an oh shit moment, but you can sort of deal with it. I think the game knows, too. At some point, I found a Casper, the Casper Bat. Have you checked this weapon
Casper
out?
Casper or Casey?
Casey bats.
Yeah.
The Casey bat.
I realized, I was like, man, this thing sucks. And I realized, oh, it's Casey Jones.
Who's that?
Mighty Casey Has Struck Out, the poem.
I'm not familiar.
I'm not
a baseball poet.
There is no joy in Mudville, I think is the... It's basically about a really good baseball player that the crowd is really hyped to see, and Mighty Casey's going to save the day, and there is no joy in whatever town is. It might be Mudville, might be Smallville,
but
because Mighty Casey has struck out. And so the end of the poem is him whiffing, and you always miss with that stupid bat.
Yeah.
That's why it's called the Casey bat.
But so what?
Yeah.
Okay, so I looked it up, because I was like, why am I missing all the time with this bat? You finally piece it... The only way I pieced it together was not because I got some obscure reference.
It's not obscure. That's freaking Americana.
Whatever. Okay. I challenge you to find some random person on the street who could tell you Casey Jones.
Okay, maybe if they're over 40.
Yeah, okay. I'll buy that. I just kept missing over and over again, and I was like, this seems like it's bugged out.
Yeah.
I looked it up, and I don't know if this is true or not. I could not confirm. Mm-hmm. But it said that the odds of hitting with that bat are only 25%, mm-hmm. but the odds go up. And the odds of you getting a smash hit are super high if your other teammates are dead.
Mm-hmm.
So and the lower life you have.
Okay.
So theoretically, it's your like go-to bat in a pinch. Mm-hmm. If, like, everyone else is gone, you need to get the hell out. You need to blast this guy out of the park.
Quip it and
so
like,
you just quip it and just smash.
Swing away.
Yeah, home run and hope for the best. I do not use that weapon. No way.
But it's so tempting because, yeah, here it is. Ha-ha. Casey at the Bat, a ballad of the Republic sung in the year 1888.
Okay, well, you know, I wasn't
first published
born
in the San Francisco Examiner.
Scott, that was published like 104 years before I was born.
I'm saying, who says video games don't have cultural relevance,
well,
right?
There we go, okay.
But the point is, that bat does have like 238 offense.
Yeah, 243.
Whatever, like the closest one before that is like 170 something. Yeah, so yeah. You're like, it's so tempting. You're like, oh yeah, I totally need this.
What
yeah.
a fucking troll, man.
Yep.
That's incredible.
It was that thing where, remember very, very early on, we read that little passage by Itoy, and he was saying like, and sometimes it's like life. There's little mean things hidden inside of it. And
whoa.
I was like, what?
Yeah, like, that's a very good point.
It's just, there's so many little things.
Well, even the idea of that Casey... Well, so here's my question, though. Do you think that the Casey bat is called that in Japanese as well?
I don't know. I mean, okay. It is... But again, this game is like a Japanese person's perception of Americana.
So it could be. Yeah.
So...
I mean, the idea of having a bat that is specifically disappointing, but you hope it's good?
Mm-hmm.
What a crazy thing.
Yeah. So, yes, I think this is... And we're at the point where I think the game is its most complex mechanically, because you have all four characters, you have the highest number of status effects,
mm-hmm.
like you can get diamondized, like,
yeah.
you know, I mean,
yeah.
you have the highest number of magic powers.
I mean, you also have the most array of items as
yeah,
well,
exactly.
and important items. Jeff, at this point, like, that guy has... tools for every scenario,
mm-hmm.
but I have to be able to remember which tool goes for which scenario.
I've been using the heavy bazooka a lot.
Yeah, the heavy bazooka yeah. just got fantastic.
Yeah.
The shield killer in this yep. section in particular is really important.
Yep.
The first time that you accidentally do, I don't know, fire Omega
yeah.
and get it reflected onto your entire party,
yeah.
oh, it is so bad.
There's something about the game... I think, I mean, I don't know, we should just sick, like, Kirk Hamilton on this or something, but, like, the sound effects and the music of this game are, like, are tuned in such a way that hearing that boom
yeah.
when you know you have a critical hit against you, it's the yeah. most heart-rending noise.
Yeah, yeah. And I love this, and I haven't seen this in other games either, not that I can remember at least, but the fact that the damage is dealt to you slowly over time,
yep.
well, Bloodborne,
yep.
that if you're quick,
yep.
if you're quick... You can go through and like heal, attack,
yep.
just so that you can get the heal off before the damage procs.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of incredible because there's that moment you hear the sound
mm-hmm.
where you see the words like Paula has taken a mortal wound,
yeah.
and you just blast through the menu,
yeah.
pray, like do all of your healing things as fast as you can, and then right as she's at like 12 hit points, she
mm-hmm.
like hurtles back up.
Yep,
super satisfying. But also then comes with a secondary risk and reward where you probably didn't plan that
yeah.
whole. Battle sequence well enough.
You were just buttoning through, and you probably made a shitty choice somewhere
yeah, and
along
you could,
the
yeah,
line.
Like Jeff
yeah.
is now just doing a plain attack.
Yeah.
And we know how useless he is at that shit. So the next thing you know, you are further behind than you were before, or
yeah.
you save yourself, you know, precious horn of life or something.
Yeah, it's something that you don't see a lot in turn-based RPGs. That it's there is a small element of race against the clock.
Yep.
Yeah, it's. It's really, and again, this doesn't really come up until you have enough life for it to make a difference.
Yeah.
Because like earlier...
With a good buffer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You would just get a mortal hit and you wouldn't have enough hit points to rotate around to the next turn. So
yeah.
like, it's definitely, this is like the apex of complexity.
Well, there's even those times when you fight an enemy that explodes.
Yeah.
And if you can get through the menu fast enough,
mm-hmm.
even though he's dead, not all of the damage he dealt will actually hit.
Because the battle will end.
And yeah, because the battle's over before. Yeah. And it's so weird where you're like slamming through the menu because you don't want to have to heal and waste psi points in between fights.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. There's a lot of sophisticated stuff going on towards the end.
Yep.
And I think with that, we should just go in and talk about the story because it's a pretty chunky one this time around.
Chunky.
I guess we can start where we left off, which is roughly around Summers.
Yes, the sweet town of Summers.
The expensive town of Summers, if I recall correctly.
Yes. You end up going to the Stoic Club.
Yeah.
That's where you get those weird people who are basically making satirical references to how adults talk.
Yeah.
Which I think is awesome.
Yeah. I think we chatted a little bit about that in the last episode, but... And I don't think I really picked up on that too much the first time around, or like the last time I played it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to describing it as the view of the adult table from the kids' table. Mm-hmm. I think that's a cool way of thinking about it.
Yeah. So you're trying to get across the ocean. There's a larger story about some guy's wife who goes to the Stoic Club and is just... being an arrogant douchebag or whatever, but you kind of snap her out of it. She makes her patented magic cake.
Oh, yes. Her magic her cake.
Magic cake.
Magic cake.
And
Ness eats it.
Ness eats it.
Trips balls.
Things get all weird, and you wake up in Dalam.
Do you find it weird that most of the time when something especially weird happens is the result of eating or imbibing something?
There's a lot of drunkenness in this game.
Yeah.
Or just like...
Well, yeah. I mean, there's another section... there's another part in this section where someone offers you tea and we get another song.
Yeah.
I mean, again, like...
That was one of my favorite parts.
Eating cake, drinking tea, drinking coffee. Those are the moments that become possibly the most surreal.
Mm.
If not... A certain section that we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was weird and interesting.
Yeah. So kind of like when we met Jeff, we just get dropped into this other part where...
You were just in Dalam.
Yeah. Pooh.
Pooh.
Kung Fu Master Pooh.
I wrote, why does Pooh look so angry? Did you notice that Pooh like...
Oh, yeah. He's always...
Scowling on his face. Yeah.
He's a Kung Fu Master.
Also, I have a question because I wrote something on my notes that I no longer understand. Okay? So... I think this is because someone says something weird to Ness, but I wrote, Guy is Ness's dad, asks who he is pretending to be. Is this all a dream?
Because you could call
your dad in Dalam.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he's like, oh, Ness, who are you pretending to be?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm.
So I think the assumption here, right, in this moment at least, was like, Ness is imagining this all.
Yeah.
He's calling his dad and saying...
He's tripping out on magic cake.
Yeah, and he's pretending to be Pooh. Like,
yeah.
I'm pretending to be this fake person.
Yeah.
There are also other times, and maybe I think that they get more and more serious as the game goes along. When you get to the sanctuaries and you get the melody, Ness always has some sort of weird hallucination or flashback.
It's like Ness sees himself... Ness is a baby looking at himself or something like that.
The one that I thought was especially touching was said Ness sees a vision of his dad holding him.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I have to say, like super interesting because the dad is completely absent from the game.
Yeah, like, you don't even know what a dad looks like. He's just a phone.
So like this memory of wanting to be held by his dad, I thought was really interesting. The idea that his dad thinks he's pretending, like, I get this weird sense now at this point, and who knows if it'll pay off in any significant way, but that this is all just an illusion, and Ness is basically working out trauma, family trauma.
I mean, you could, there could be, like, a whole conspiracy that, like, Pooh and Ness are the same person, or maybe Ness is all four of these characters.
Do we see anybody else talking to Pooh? That's what I'm saying. I mean, this is. I think that there's enough weird, bizarre things in this game to treat it like The Shining.
Yeah.
Like, there's just all sorts of bizarre stuff.
Yeah.
That moment struck out to me because Pooh is, it almost makes more sense that you go to Jeff, which I think is a really, like we said in that earlier episode, is a really great moment. Because you're suddenly in the school and he has his own life and it's like, oh, I'm calling to you. But there isn't that same like call. We heard earlier in the first song a reference to Pooh before we ever meet him.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden you are just Pooh.
Yeah.
And the way that people talk to you like in Dalam is one that is both like of reverence but also like they know that you are leaving.
Yeah.
I think at one point they call Pooh Ness's servant.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was interesting as well.
Yeah, it's pretty strange to have this kind of you are going to, their leader is going to follow a different leader.
Yep.
Because Ness is looked at as like, oh, he's the savior, blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, Pooh is like some warrior prince or whatever from Dalaam.
Yeah.
I thought Dalaam just aesthetically is really cool. Like it's again, it's a different, it's kind of this faux Eastern Indian slash China mix up or whatever.
A city in the clouds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to do some meditating, like where you have to purposefully just sit there for a while where it tests you.
That was weird. Yeah. I love that part. I mean, at one point they say, to complete your trial, I'm going to break your legs.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
That's so weird. And then they chop off your arms, mm-hmm. chop off your head, they take your eyes, yeah. and then they take your mind. Like, mm-hmm. It's a sort of startlingly adult moment.
Mm-hmm.
One, because I think as a kid, I don't really know what like meditation or weird,
yeah.
let alone some weird existential trial in which you're willingly giving yourself up to nothingness.
Yeah.
Pretty neat.
Yeah. So you leave.
You do.
You just kind of join the party, by the way.
Like, you just show up and like, hey, what's up, I'm Pooh.
This happens again later on where Pooh just kind of pieces out. And then he comes back in. Yeah. Like he's...
What Pooh says is like, hey, I gotta go
yeah.
discover some new powers. And he comes back and is like, I got my sweet powers.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's just very unusual in a game to have...
Maybe there was like a scene that was cut.
Well, I have my suspicions from a technical perspective, but we can actually talk about that a little bit later. So you are back and you go through another sanctuary location. This one is down in the sewers.
This is tough.
I actually don't have a huge memory of this one. Like, was this one tough?
I remember it being pretty hard, but...
Yeah, it was in Foreside.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's the theme is, like, this game is kind of structured in such a way that pretty much every dungeon is really hard. Like,
yeah, that's probably true.
I don't know. It's rare that by the time I get to the boss, I'm not thinking to myself, wow, I have low psi points and I don't have many items. You know, like, I feel like every time it's by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah, and every time I get to the boss, I go... Okay, I have to win now because I don't want to have to go through all of that again.
Yeah.
So I unload. Like, I absolutely unload everything that I have. And a few of the bosses, I've won with only Ness alive.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the thing that I potentially didn't do. So we talked about this, and we talked about this because the similar thing happened in Bloodborne.
Yes.
Man, it's kind of crazy how many parallels there are to this.
Well, I think what's so interesting is every time we have one of these episodes, we always compare, I think we compare Earthbound to a different game, but a really high quality, super interesting game.
Yeah.
So it's like there are little elements in Earthbound that are related to all of these other games that are compelling for various reasons. This one being the weird fact that you can optionally skip bosses.
Yeah. And so you did one way earlier in the game.
Yeah, so I'm
pretty sure I skipped this. Because you go back up to Dalaam.
Oh, and you fight the twins.
Yeah, and you have the twins. Yeah, because, I don't think I think I just went off to the next place after this.
Can we also talk a little bit how weird it is that Pooh can mirror an enemy and become them?
Well, can he? Because every time I try to do it, he fucking fails out.
I've succeeded. Yeah, literally, every time I meet a new enemy, I try.
Yeah.
And if it fails, I never try again.
Yeah.
But it does succeed. Like, the cloud guys.
Yeah.
The reason I thought about it is I saw that image just now, and he can mirror the cloud guys.
Yeah.
But then he just spams their ability. Mm-hmm. It's like not all that useful.
I mean, depending on who he mirrors, like I did it a couple times when it was those mice that do smash attacks all the time,
which
was pretty hilarious because every time he would attack, it would do either nothing or just smash the people.
Stupid amount of damage. Yeah.
So this is actually one of the things that I have to go back and do. What was the one that you went back?
So
and
I missed the one that was right after Paula.
Okay. Oh right.
Yeah, so which is like a big mole guy.
Yep. When you go back and you save Paula the first time Paula gets kidnapped.
Yeah, it's funny because I fought other moles, so I guess I just forgot that I didn't do it. But when you talk later on in the dinosaur section to the talking stone head, he lists all of the locations and one of them ones that he mentioned, I wrote down all the notes and crossed them off after using the soundstone. I was like, oh, I don't have that one.
Yeah. So I need to go back and do that.
Yes.
What I did immediately after is I wound up back in Summers, which is kind of the next part of it, where you start your voyage on the boat. Another one of those moments where it's just kind of reflective and you're like hanging out on the boat until a Kraken attacks you and you have to, you know, fight that guy.
When you beat the Kraken, you get some Kraken soup. I don't know if you can ever get it again, but I ate it and like totally wasted it. I was in battle. I thought maybe like I would become a Kraken or something. I don't know. Sometimes I use items not knowing what they do.
That's the funny thing. Like you can even, there are times when I look in the help menu, like you can click on the help menu and then click on item and it gives you a description. Yeah. Sometimes it goes into like a whole history of what the item is and doesn't really tell you like the practical implications of it. Or it's like, this tea was made by kings back in the land of Scaraba. Yeah. And it's like, what?
Like, or like, this helps a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's great.
Yeah, it's just, there's these
also
little like...
Also kind of like Bloodborne.
Yeah. What does Arcane even do? So you voyage across the sea, you make it to the desert land, Scaraba, and I like this quite a bit, even though I find the desert annoying because you get heat stroke a lot.
Yeah.
But I guess I like the open space of it. Like, it's one of those other, I think there's a couple places in this section actually that we just played where it feels sprawling in a way that sometimes it's hard for 2D sprite-based things to feel sprawling.
Honestly, I like the sense of scale in these areas, but the fact that enemies will spawn in sort of dark zones makes it really obnoxious, because if you don't know where you're going, you're just going back and forth between battles, and then before you know it, like, you die, and you haven't actually progressed at all. That's real frustrating.
Yeah. But you're out here to, you know, keep looking. You have some tips based on what you've learned in the museums that there are more sanctuaries to be found out here.
Well, specifically, Pooh reads ancient hieroglyphs.
Yeah. Well, because, come on.
Okay, of course.
He's a warrior prince.
He knows dead languages.
Part of being a warrior is he's a martial artist. He knows all of the arts.
Prince Henry can speak, like, weird ancient forms of Gaelic, I'm pretty sure.
So you find the Sphinx. You do a small puzzle where you have to touch various pads in a...
Yeah. I don't know how I solved it, but I solved it. There's like a clue. It's like 5, 2, east.
It's when you're in the... I think it's when you're in the museum and you look at some of the hieroglyphs.
Oh, right.
And it tells you like... Because it's funny because it actually uses the font as a clue. Because it positions the numbers in the five-pointed star that the panels are in.
Oh, right, that you have to touch in that order.
Exactly, okay. So you know which one to go to next, which is kind of funny, because it's kind of like the Mr. Saturns, where it's using the text to make a point, not just the meaning of the text, which is kind of clever. I like that. So the mystery of the Sphinx, you open that guy up, everything is great. The inside of the pyramid that you go into has a bunch of these hieroglyphs that kind of come alive, which I like quite a bit. It's a neat effect that they use.
Yeah, they're like 2D and they move around.
Yeah. And at this point, you have all four of your people, and I don't know. I wasn't really that challenged by this one. I don't know. No, How'd you feel about it?
This just feels great. When you have all four, it's like you're in the money.
All of your friends.
You're all together.
There was a lot of optional items here where like you can throw a snake at someone or you have a bag of snakes that you can throw at people.
A lot of the smaller items are kind of useless. It's actually a little annoying. I think there's too many items.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can poison an enemy, but unless you're fighting them for a very long time, it's kind of, one, it's pointless because you could do more damage by just hitting them. Two, if you use them in battles that are long, aka boss fights, oftentimes they just won't land.
Mm-hmm.
So they become kind of useless, and I end up just selling my snakes and bags of snakes and
stuff. I'm selling you back this bag of snakes, sir.
I really don't want this snake. I could buy that for $5.
After you bought it for like $500.
Man, you know what's bullshit is later on there's ATM machines that want half a cut.
There's that one guy in the... I forget.
What a jerk!
The Tendanda or whatever. Yeah. I forget what they're... That guy was like, I'll let you withdraw, but my fee is equal to what you are drawing out.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Can you imagine going to an ATM where it's like...
Take out $100.
The fee is $100. What? No. Especially when, like, literally when that happened, I just teleported to Saturn Valley, got all my shit for free, was like, I'm fucking out of here, back.
You know...
That's how you lose business.
People. I've met mythical creatures before, and the Saturns were way nicer than these guys.
They were way nicer.
I wrote down something in my notes that I wanted to bring up. When you were on the boat, the sailor, gets seasick and stops the boat for a while he's sick. And then he has this conversation about, like, have you ever been homesick or have you ever just wanted to go home and, like, just leave all this behind? And how, so, like, every part of this game has a has a moment where it's trying to remind you that somewhere back in Onet, outside of in the suburbs of Onet, yeah, like your house is just there.
Well, I finally succumbed in this session to like homesickness.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty debilitating.
Yeah, in battle it's like Ness thinks about his mom.
Yeah, and he just doesn't do anything.
Yeah,
yeah. Going back to the theory that maybe none of this is real, maybe this is all just a sort of weird allegory for like running away from home.
Yeah,
right. Like, yeah, you go out, you have some imaginary friends. Maybe Jeff and Paul are real.
Yeah.
Let's say Pooh is not real.
I would say if you had to choose one of them, Pooh is the leading theory for the person that's not real.
Yes. Yeah. So Pooh is an extension of your own personality. You run away from home. You call home and you find out that your parents actually don't miss you.
Yeah.
You know, though not the way that they want you to miss you.
Yeah, right? They're just like, oh, hi, Ness.
Yeah, like I get the sense that Ness misses his parents more than they miss him.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned this, and Ratish on Twitter, one of the listeners, mentioned that the way that he read the mom was that she was actually really loving.
Yeah.
And every time that you called, she wants to sort of let you go off in your journey and understands that and respects that in a way that was a totally different reading than the way I think you and I read it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the other thing, if you're going to go into the theory of Ness's interpretation of events is different. Like,
right,
it's like, you know, there's always these stories, you know, when kids think they're being really bad and run away from home, and really what they're doing is like getting about a block away, and then like that's their biggest adventure. Like,
right,
for Ness's mom, for her interpretation of this, you know, Ness is going to like the grandest desert in the world. Maybe he's just out at the park that has a sandbox.
Yeah, you know? That's like, true. I mean, and let's say even if it is real, right? Like, I think there's an interesting story there too, in that the mom's reaction to your journeys when you call her never vary based upon where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's because Ness doesn't tell her, Mom, I'm in some deep, dark, underground cavern,
yeah,
and there's fucking dinosaurs attacking me, and I almost died today, but instead just doesn't tell anything to her. But I like the idea that she is sort of oblivious to how far you're going,
mm-hmm,
and every time you miss home and every time you call home, like, you're sort of testing the boundaries of how far you can run away this time,
mm-hmm,
you know? Like, when you're a kid and you slowly start realizing how far away you can get from home, right? Like, you know, there's the first time as a kid that you spend the night at someone's house.
Yeah.
And then there's the first time you, you know, go to like a concert in a different city with friends,
yeah,
or something. Or, yeah, you know, we grew up in the Bay Area. There's the first time you go into San Francisco,
yeah,
without your parents.
Yep.
Or the first time you go farther and farther, an overnight camping trip over, mm-hmm, several days, all that stuff,
yeah,
right? And each of those times, I think that you learn something and that you are pushing the boundaries of the relationship that you have with your family and,
yep,
your friends and yourself as an independent person. And I think every time Ness keeps going to a new area, that's the sort of expression of that, like, newfound independence.
Yeah. And as the tea leaves will say later, when you go back, everything seems a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
Like the more you push that boundary, the more you realize what the scale of the world actually is,
yeah,
and things that once seemed enormous are like, oh, this is quaint now.
You know? Well, I mean, this is a perfect, I mean, we're jumping a little ahead of ourselves, but I think this is perfectly reflected when you first enter the underground, I guess you would call it like dinosaur sanctuary.
The land of the lost.
Yeah, land of the lost. God, I love that TV show as a kid. Welcome to the land of the lost. When you first enter the land of the lost, all of a sudden the camera is like a mile above you, and you're all tiny, tiny. Even like when you die, you could tell they're tiny little sprites that reflect the same ghost and halo angels of Paula and Jeff and Pooh. That scale was hilarious. I couldn't help but laugh out loud. Because suddenly the game became this, like, epic JRPG.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you, like, go back. I mean, in my case, I went back to Tucson, right, to go, mm-hmm, do that thing. And, yeah, it did feel small.
Yeah. Yeah. So we left off in the pyramid. You leave the pyramid. You make your way through. And you've gone through this underground cavern to, like, a second part of the desert, basically. Mm-hmm. And this is where Pooh is like, my people need me. I must go.
Piece. Yeah, I gotta go.
So Pooh leaves the party. He's like, okay, this will actually be worth it. Don't worry about it. Like, he even says something like, I need to go learn something.
This is right when you get used to him. This is just like when they took Paula.
Yeah, it is. It's very cyclical. Jeff is, he's our rock.
Yeah, come on, Jeff.
Jeff is the one that...
Never leave me, Jeff. I know who my true friends are.
So Pooh leaves. You're down to three people again. But you're not down to three people for very long. because you... wander around the desert for a while. You meet a bunch of weirdos out there in the desert, like there's always weirdos in the Earthbound universe. But you find this like huge stone colossus.
Yeah.
Who turns out to be, I thought at first, because I kind of forgot this part of the game. I was like, oh man, like what is this thing? Was this like built by someone? It seems like it's built by, what's his name? Brick Road. Brick yeah. Road, the dungeon builder.
Yes.
Who you first encountered in Winters.
I think it is Brick Road.
It is. That's yeah. the thing. Because, like, you go inside this massive stone colossus. You fight your way to the top in a comically easy dungeon.
Yep.
With a bunch of signs around.
I love this. Yeah. This dungeon is so good. It's so well designed. It's such, like, a great tongue-in-cheek reference. There's an awesome section that is basically a zoo mm-hmm. with all of the enemies that you fight in a dungeon. And yeah. it's just like, this is this enemy. You can experience them in like a safe space. Or in one of the very first signs says, most travelers go to the right first.
Yeah.
And if you go to the left, you see an ATM yeah. and a place to rest and save, and there's a doctor. It's everything at this point in the game you desperately need because yeah. you've been out in the desert. And it teases you because you're like, okay, well, most people go right. Maybe I should go right. No, I'm going to go left and yeah. see what happens.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
I remember there's a bathroom in the dungeon, and there's somebody yeah. in the bathroom, and they're having like an existential crisis. They're like, why am I here? What am I doing? Yeah. Like, they're just locked in the bathroom. They're just like locked themselves in. They're just being weird.
Yep. There's references to like, oh man, there's like dead ends, right? Yeah. And at the dead end, it'll say something like, oh, I wish there's prizes at dead ends, but there's no prize. There's yeah. nothing over here. There's no reason to be here by the sign.
And there's one where it's like, a lot of times there's a really good item at the end of this long dead end. Yeah. And then there's one where there's just an item sitting in the middle of the critical path. And they're like, if an item's easy to get to, it's probably not that good. And you open it, it's like a cookie or something.
Yeah,
like,
which you haven't needed in like hours and hours of gameplay. This is the moment where the designers are literally speaking to you about something that they like doing, yeah. and you get the sense
yeah.
they're having fun because they're dungeon designers and they get to design a dungeon, and yeah. this is what it would be like if they could speak directly to players.
Just design an ironic dungeon that is also making fun of Brick Road for just being kind of a subpar dungeon designer. Because like his first dungeon was just like a big straight yeah. line. Like,
but it's a dungeon made with love.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you know? Totally. Like, it's interesting from a geographic perspective. It's just yeah. not like... it's nothing compared to even the earlier dungeons. Yeah,
absolutely
dungeons.
Not. Yeah. yeah, so you end up going through that, and yeah. he has a collection of, like, automobiles yeah. and stuff. He's got, like, cars, he's got the Vita chamber,
yeah.
And he has a submarine, which is the one that you need.
The most freaky thing, though, is when you reach the top, because you are ascending through the huge stone colossus,
yep.
and every sign says, oh, you're now near my belly button, or you've walked up closer to my neck or something.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
And like at the top, he's there, but he's in a rock face. Like yeah. he's Brick Road is this, he's like become one with the colossus.
It's pretty gross.
Yeah, like
when it's weird because the colossus has a face.
Yeah.
And now he has a face inside his face.
Yeah. I don't know, like he's been morphed into this yeah. like strange, he is now a dungeon.
This is something that you would see in like a weird 80s fantasy movie.
Yeah, exactly. It struck me as that's exactly right. Like some weird, like
it's like fucking old Greg is in there. Yeah.
But so you finally make it to his actual brain or whatever, which mm-hmm. is just him ensconced in the rock. And then he's like, oh, can I just hang out with you for a while, like as a party member?
Yeah.
I think that they may have wanted to do this and they could not have all these people on screen at the same time.
Oh, you mean they from a technical perspective to have
yeah. Because yeah. the game was kind of chugging at this point for me, and I was like, man, there's a lot of sprites on the screen, and like, there's yeah. some slowdown here. I bet they had to get rid of a character.
Yeah, I could buy that.
And
yeah.
then they're like, oh, we can actually write this into the story, because fuck it, it's Earthbound.
Yeah, and he's not with you very long,
yeah.
the thing, yeah.
But he does take part in battles, so
yep.
as the same way that the monkey will take part or whatever, except he can, wait, like, you know crush what? Enemies.
I never got in a fight with him.
Oh, man, yeah.
So what does he do when you fight?
He just uses, like, huge punches. Stomps and, like, and stuff? Yeah, exactly.
Does he,
like,
just obliterate?
Yeah, he just does a huge amount of damage to enemies.
That's awesome. I should have farmed while I had him in my party.
Yeah, I mean, you can just kind of hang out and do your thing with this huge stone golem. Like he doesn't show up as like having HP or whatever, he's right. just like a monkey.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Let's see, there's you fight a bunch of other things. Eventually he gets kind of stuck, and you figure out like
real quickly,
yeah, he gets yeah, I mean there's like one region where you have him, but then you realize that to get to the next sanctuary location, you actually need a submarine because there's another body of water you need to cross. And he just so happens to have a submarine in his collection of toys or whatever. Perfect, so yeah. Cool, you just go in there and grab the submarine.
A broken submarine that somehow still works.
And also, it's a reference to the Beatles because it's like, okay, here's a submarine. I assure you, the color is just a coincidence or something like that. Right. And I was like, man. There's also, like, I was doing some research after, I think, I forget who, someone wrote into the cast. There's significant amounts of sampling in the game's music.
Oh, really?
Of which the Beatles is actually one of them in certain... like certain music has like, and it's not just like sampling in the way that like popular rap songs do it. It's sampled, but then distorted and like weaved in and stuff.
If you listen closely, you can hear Ja Rule in the background.
So we made it to the forest.
It's like more of a swamp, really.
Yeah, that's true. So you make it to this forest and they tell you like, hey, this is going to be a bad place. And lo and behold, it is like,
it is a bad place.
I mean, it's again, like Bloodborne, you go into this area where the ground hurts you.
Yeah. Like a poison swamp.
Yeah.
There's a guy there though that sells illicit goods and it is the best illicit good in the game.
what do you get from this guy? I think
it's the twin bottle rockets.
Oh, okay.
That saved my ass in the boss fight. It was like Ness and Jeff.
Yeah.
Super low. And it does like 2,000 damage.
Holy
like,
crap. Something
absurd. Like, that's probably a gross exaggeration, but it can wipe out an enemy.
I just like the idea of, like, Ness and Jeff are dying. Like, Jeff is, like, frantically looking for the fuse. Oh, God. Like, yeah. Oh, God. Like,
yeah.
I bought the, I forget what it's called. It's like the pig's nose or something that you can like hunt for truffles here.
I couldn't figure out who sold that. I mean, I knew that I needed it because it says something like, oh, if you have a pig something or other.
I wonder where I got it. Maybe I got it back in the desert or something.
So what did the truffles give you if you find them?
So I couldn't find one. I was close to one and it was saying, oh, it's pretty close, but we don't know exactly where. And so I was like trying to like inspect every like square block around an area, but I never found it. It was close to the tree at the very beginning of the forest.
Interesting. Well, you'd probably eat it and trip balls and like make up some imaginary friends.
Yeah, but I mean this was definitely for me this was pretty tough. I don't know if maybe I was just underleveled or something, but like I was always getting hurt by the stupid poison.
Yep.
Like the blobs would always get the jump on me. I don't know. Oh,
that's hard.
I realized that it got a lot easier when I called Escargot Express and got the Franklin badge back, because the Franklin badge reflects and disperses lightning attacks off of you.
Oh.
Because those stupid eels are always electrocuting you. And so if you have the Franklin badge, if anyone has it in their inventory, it helps the entire party.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Interesting.
So that was really cool.
I probably sold that.
Yeah. I mean, it helped me earlier in the game, too. So I was like, okay, I need to just hold on to this.
Yeah.
But eventually you make it into the tendas.
Yep.
Which are yet another weird little non-human race in Earthbound.
They're like, I imagine they're made out of like moss.
Yeah, they're just like tiny little Ents.
Yeah.
They're the forest children.
Well, they like live underground and like one of them has horns.
That one does that. Why does that one have horns?
He's the leader. I presume it's like some sign of aged wisdom.
So that one's the leader, not the one that
isn't
shy?
I hope I grow horns. I'm like 50.
I mean, just like, well, if you grow horns, I'm going to need to take you to the sacrificial place. You'll meet another like princess who you need to walk through the entire castle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but there's one of them that will actually talk to you, who's not shy, as they say, which I thought was a funny thing, because in JRPGs, nobody is shy.
Yeah, because everyone just talks to you out of the blue.
Yeah, but in this game, you meet this whole village of people who would actually respond like normal humans, except they're little green guys.
So you have to go get a book from the library in
Onet.
Onet,
You have to go back to the first town.
All the way back.
Yeah.
And I was like, where's the library?
Mm-hmm.
I poked around like looking for the library forever. I went to the hint house, too, and the guy's like, you need to find the book.
Do you still have the map in your inventory?
I do, yeah. But the library is not marked on the map.
Yeah, you just have to actually look at it. Like, you have to, like, look at the thing. But, like, I always think about, like, maybe I should ditch the map. Like, I could have one extra thing in my inventory. Yeah. But I just like the map. I just like to hold on to it.
I ditched it once, and it was not good. I also kept the receiver. I feel like I should get rid of that. My dad calls and tells me, like,
that is so funny. Like, at random times, too. Yeah. Like, you're, like, right in the middle of a super dramatic part, and you're like...
Yeah, it's like, son... You must be pretty tired. Yeah. I accidentally said yes for the first time. Oh, he's like, oh, well, in that case, you should go to find a hotel.
Yeah.
I know, dude. Get off my back, okay?
Have you ever, after you've saved, have you ever just said, yeah, I think I should call it a night? Have you ever done
yeah,
that?
Yeah, and I think the game froze, right?
Yeah, the game just freezes.
It locks up.
And he even says, hey, you should actually turn the power off and not just press reset.
Yeah. That's
because he knows that you're just going to, like, reset the game and
so
play.
So maybe,
like,
this is all a dream, but it's my dream. Yeah. It's not Ness's.
Yeah. Your dad is continually, like, making sure that you don't become, like, a salaryman, basically.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's just nuts.
Because there's no reason to keep that receiver, right?
I don't know. I mean, every once in a while, you get a call from, like, Apple Kid.
Huh.
Yeah. Remember, because you get a call this is after you realize that you can't really do anything in the Tenda Village.
Apple Kid is useless, too. He's always working on some weird, dumb thing.
Orange right? Kid is useless.
Oh, Orange Kid
Apple
is the useless
Kid
one. Okay,
is, our,
right.
is the cool
He's
guy.
He's the guy that's like, yeah. I got some new tech for you.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so that was Apple Kid was... And then you also, like, get a call from him, and he's in trouble. Like, yep. You don't really know what's happening, so you have to get the book. But you also know shit is going down in Winters for some reason, but you don't quite know what is happening in Winters.
Yep.
Winters
is coming.
Yeah, Winters is coming. It's not just about childhood abandonment anymore. So I guess that's when I don't... You can probably do this out of order, actually. You can go...
Back to Winters
mm. and do the book first.
This was the hardest part, I think.
You think this was?
Yeah. Like, there's a part where you go underground
mm.
and there's all these robots.
Oh yeah. That one was really annoying.
Stonehenge. Yeah. You go to, like, find Dr. Endonuts and he's not there.
Yeah.
And you have to go underground.
And even some of the Tessie people were like, oh, they kidnapped John or whatever. Yeah. Like, they're all like, people are disappearing in Winters for some reason.
Well, probably they're being abducted by aliens and being, like, probed and stuff.
Well, they actually are being abducted by aliens because you find out that at the end of that dungeon, there's a bunch of people, like, in fucking Aliens 3 or
Big
something.
Old alien tubes.
Yeah, who are like,
I kind of wish you could just leave them there.
Kill me.
Like a chest burster just rips out of, like, yeah.
I think my notes said people in freaky tubes.
Like, it's pretty freaky.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually, the music is also really unsettling.
Mm.
Oh, side note. We didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
The music in the dungeon,
mm-hmm.
the dungeon man's dungeon,
oh,
is hilariously bad.
Yeah.
And there's a sign that specifically says he's so proud of the music that he made.
And it says something like, oh, this is my masterpiece or something like that.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. In a game where the music is always good, and then it's really bad.
All weird, off-tone, like, gross.
Yeah, so this alien part, totally freaky, very, very difficult.
It was difficult.
I was constantly running away from battle.
Yeah. I think this is where I, like, ramped up my experience farming a lot. Like, I figured out this pattern where the star men, they teleport at you, but if you turn around when they're teleporting, they'll try to teleport behind you, but then they'll actually overshoot you and you'll get a green on them.
Oh,
and
whoa,
so,
that's,
like,
a next level strategy.
It was by accident too. I was like, oh, holy crap. And I tested it a bunch of times. It's like, oh, you can bait these guys into trying to attack you.
Yeah. So I was always banking that if they teleported past me, I would keep running past them. And so I was able to avoid a lot of those fights.
Have you been using any of, like, the skip sandwiches?
I don't buy food. Mm. I don't buy, like, sauces.
The skip sandwich DX makes you run faster on the map.
Really?
Yeah. So you can, like, it like doubles your walking speed or something like
for
that.
For how long?
A little while. I mean, not that long, but a couple screens worth of...
Interesting.
Skipping.
Wow, I should use that.
Yeah. I mean, now you're probably really overpowered.
Yeah, that's
so, like,
true.
You
it
don't,
doesn't really matter.
But like, during this fight, I mean, at the time... you know what? We didn't even talk about this, but when does Pooh actually come back? Because at this point, I think Pooh is back.
He comes back during some battle, because right at the end of it, he shows up and uses his star power.
Right.
Which is a very expensive power, but really effective.
Yeah. Except if they have a shield and it reflects back on
and
you,
then
and you're like,
your entire party
fucking
dies.
Die.
Yeah. And that happened.
Yeah. Oh, it was at the end of one of the bosses in the forest. But yeah, so, like, Pooh just pops back in. It's like,
hey,
oh, hey, guess what I learned? Like, oh no. Like,
I want to do that one day. I should just disappear, come back,
fucking
like, George, where have you been? Yeah, I'm just like, oh, look what I learned.
It's like
I
what
can
Batman did.
Press a Buick. Yeah, it is. What did they chant when he
was going? Oh, it was like, like, Wah, Shaw,
Yeah. Shaw. Shaw.
Pooh, I will break your spirit. There's no true defeat without hope.
Oh, man. Great.
So Pooh comes back. Pooh's really good now that he has the star power. But you're right. You can only use it a handful of times before you're totally tapped out.
Yeah.
And because, I don't know if I just fucked up or something, but Ness has terrible speed as a stat. Like, Ness almost always goes last in my in my lineup.
It's because you haven't taken the speed pills.
I've been shunting all of the speed pills to Ness now because I'm like, you need to get fast. Like, you're like the hardest hitter.
Yeah.
Like,
I think at this point, one of your team members will be that way. Like, yeah. Jeff is that way for me. He always goes last, which is actually good because I can ally some of his item usage around it. The people that I want to go immediately are Pooh and Paula. Like, they need to get those massive damage dealing spells off.
Yeah.
Or they need to get the, like, all shield off.
Yeah, that's why Pooh has kind of become my de facto, like, emergency healer. Like, if I know someone's already damaged, I'll go with Pooh because he'll go right away.
Yep.
And Ness is kind of my maintenance healer because he'll go last.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, if I am assuming that we'll need a shield, I'll just have Ness cast it because he's last.
Most of the time, Ness is my healer because he has so much side points doesn't usually need to use it.
Yeah. At this point, I don't use Rockin' very much anymore. Yeah. It's...
Is it Rockin'?
Ness has stopped Rockin'. That's sad. It's really sad.
I game now and then.
You know?
I do some side gaming.
I noticed that after you defeat the alien, everyone escapes from the tubes and you can talk to each person and they actually give you like a little bit of customized text for each one.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, Jeff's friend.
Yeah.
He says
he's in a romantic relationship with him.
He makes a specific point saying that, oh, you're Ness. I've known Jeff for the longest.
Yeah.
Like,
I love that. It's so cute.
Yeah.
It's that childhood jealousy that you get as a kid of like,
yeah.
Oh, don't take him. He's my best friend.
Yeah.
And like, he wants to prove it. I like that a lot.
There's like these little, and you could just walk right past that. Mm-hmm. Like, you can just not even, I talked to him twice to see if I was catching on correctly. I was like, oh, he's pissed off that Jeff is now hanging out with Ness all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like he's sad that Jeff has left Winters, you know? Yeah.
Well, he's got all these newfound powers and stuff. The dude's a genius. You're holding him down, Tony.
Except for Dr. Andon, it's still a douche after you get him out of the fucking tube. Yeah, that was funny. Okay, so you actually have to do this before the book, apparently, because they've returned it to the library after that. Okay, that makes sense.
Yep. So you go to Onnette.
Yeah.
You find the book. It's in the bookcase.
I also visited the Ness's house, too, just to kind of see what was happening. And it's like, oh, it seems like nothing has changed. Nice. You know, like everyone's happy. Yeah. You go back to the Tenda chief, and then you teach all the people how...
Well, he reads the book aloud. He reads it aloud.
That's
and
true.
Everyone overcomes their shyness.
Everyone is now willing to put up with Ness and the party's bullshit of, like, asking them a bunch of questions. But this is, again, one of my favorite parts, where you drink the hallucinogenic tea again.
Yep.
And we actually learn, like, a little bit more about the narrator. It's definitely not Ness. Because he's like talk, or it's a part of Ness's psyche that.
I mean, yes. I think that it might be a part of Ness's bonkers psyche when he's tripping balls. I mean, he's like high, right? He's probably speaking in the third person.
Yeah. But there's so many, like, it's kind of cheesy if you just read the text, but there's so many, like, I don't know, I'll just say, there's so many profound things that go through that text where it's like, they say something like, you know, take a minute and think about how strong you've become.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really seem like it, but remember Tucson? Like, they even mention it by name.
Yeah.
Like, you can go through there and overpower enemies that once gave you the worst troubles. Like, think about, like, because it's recognizing how hard the game has gotten.
Yeah.
Because, like, the game is gotten very hard comparatively, but they're saying, but think of how far you've come.
I mean, okay, another Bloodborne moment here, right? But... there comes a time in Bloodborne, like when I finally beat the game, and we'll talk about this another time, I guess. Yeah. But there are certain times when you beat a boss or whatever, and you are like riding that high.
Yeah.
Like, you fucking did it. Like, that feels so good. And as a kid, like, those moments are few and far between in your real life.
Yeah.
And games can provide that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can provide that not a form of escapism, but a form of like something to be proud of, because you really did put in a lot of effort and you really have gotten better.
Yep.
Like, it's not just about min-maxing. Look at you. You're now managing these complex systems
yep.
in a way that you thought you weren't even capable of. And this isn't something they test on, you know, in your school tests or, you know, your star exams. Mm. Don't tell you whether or not you can manage a group of four in a battle against a giant mole king or whatever. And it's so easy to sort of underplay those small victories.
Mm.
So to have the game take that moment and tell you, no, actually, this is a big victory. This is something that's really cool. You know, you've come this long way. It's pretty cool to think of as an experience for children, right? Like, if you were playing this game as a kid and it was your first time and you get to that part and it's like, hey, you know what? You're actually pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And it also just acknowledges, like, one of the lines that I liked the best was, remember, when you are suffering hardships, your enemy is also struggling.
Yeah.
So it's like, you think you're against this, you think you're against this, like, unassaultable force.
Yeah.
And, like, Gygas has always been this weird shadowy monster. Yeah. It's like, he might as well be both invisible and invincible. Yeah. Like,
well, this is the exact opposite of what normal games or stories do generally anyway, right? Yeah. As the stakes are raising, the enemy seems stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
Like, this is not something... Like, they're undermining Gygas right now. They're saying, oh, he's in panic mode because he's you're stronger and now he's not sure that he can beat you.
Yeah. It's like this thing where people's exterior is a facade and what's happening inside is like a totally different thing. You're like, think about your enemies. Like, your enemies are not these invincible things. Like, they are struggling as much as you are.
Right.
You
know? And then again, think of that. Imagine that lesson being imparted to you as like a 10-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, when you're dealing with the trauma of being in middle school, there's like bullies and stuff, right? Like, it's awful. You have people that you genuinely think are enemies.
Yeah.
That like sort of hurt you and are mean. And
you think that are kind of these like, these just facades. Like, there's nothing behind them. They're just, they're just a single entity of badness.
But in fact, part of growing up is realizing like, you know, people misbehave or are mean. Yeah, sometimes because they're just assholes, but a lot of times because they have their own problems and troubles and things aren't going well in their life.
Yep.
And, you know, if you're struggling, hey, they probably are struggling too. And if you can find small victories and maybe there's ways for them to improve also. Like, that's just a really cool lesson to impart specifically to kids that, in my mind, reinforces this game as a children's game.
Mm.
And two, reinforces that as probably one of the best children's game ever made because it's addressing these things that are quintessential about growing up.
Yeah. Okay, so the next part is like maybe my favorite part.
Really?
Because you go into another sanctuary location.
Mm-hmm.
You fight some pretty tough enemies, actually. Oh,
yeah. That boss is tough.
Yeah, this is one of the things where it's like I had to use the shield clear a lot. Yeah. I mean, the boss of it was just continually reflecting my attacks. There's a lot of times where I think there's a few exploding enemies in this this area too. Like, you're underneath the Tenda village, basically. But you know, the dungeon itself is like pretty nondescript. But when you get to the actual sanctuary location, again, this is like one of my favorite parts.
It's
like
so weird.
It's like this weird like bioluminescent walls.
It's like glowing moss.
But then you see like a billboard, these words start scrolling across the screen, and you realize it's Ness.
Yeah, his thoughts.
His thoughts. And he's like, oh, I hope my friends are doing well. I can't believe I struggled to get here. And I'm like, wait, who is my? Who is I?
Who never, like, Ness doesn't speak in
this. Exactly. He's a silent protagonist. And you're like, wait, who is this my? And you're like, oh, wait, this is Ness thinking. You know?
But,
like,
but again, another theory that it's all a dream.
Yeah.
Because he says, these are my thoughts, or are they?
Yeah.
Exactly. ... Whose thoughts would they be if they're not your thoughts? What's happening?
I mean, it could be... I mean, which my is it? It could be Pooh or Paula or any of his alter egos, but like, just...
What, is it signed by Ness?
I mean, it's just...
It uses the word Ness, right?
Yeah, it uses the word Ness. Because I think he even says something like, oh, I'm Ness or something like that.
Yeah.
My friends are this and like blah, blah, blah. And like, you just get this... again, most JRPG, like, silent protagonist is not a unusual thing, but Ness is not a cipher.
Yeah.
Even though he doesn't talk. Like, he has this, so late in the game, you're being reminded that, just like the T told you, everyone has this weird internal struggle that's happening.
Yeah.
Like, even Ness does. Yeah. But we just never really think about it because we're the ones fixing other people's problems.
Right,
because
you're the player, not... Yeah. But you're not internal into Ness's mind.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, it's kind of like The Walking Dead where you play as Lee, but you don't know Lee's thought process. Yeah. Like, you don't know if Lee's an actual murderer or not till, like, later on in the game.
Sure, yeah.
Like, you don't know what Ness is doing. Like, you're just controlling.
Maybe he's a murderer. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe all three of those are just actual ghosts.
Yeah, maybe he wakes up and he's actually murdered all of these people that he thought were just, like, being tamed or whatever.
Yeah,
Side note, by the way, we skipped it over. This is also the section when they offer you the opportunity, two-thirds into the game, to change your name.
It's just, you could just change your entire file name, like something crazy too. And they're like, "Oh, are you sure? Like, do you really want it?" They ask you a couple times.
And then when you say, "Like, yeah, I'm sure I want to be an S," like, yeah. I knew it.
Yeah. It's just the game just like is, first of all, it's just continually surprising. There's always surprises, but it just brings you back to think about the characters as people.
Yeah,
like kind of cyclically throughout the game, and like this is one of those where the game again surprises me with how, with its depth, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, it's thematic depth. Like, it's willing to just almost towards the end, like, okay, Ness has these weird thoughts that we haven't even been considering this whole time.
Yeah,
we know Ness gets homesick, but for some reason it wasn't really real to me until I saw his thoughts, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think of Ness as a thinking individual.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
God.
Yeah, and it was just cool. It was pretty.
I mean, it was.
The bioluminescence, that's exactly what I thought of, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's like an unusual aesthetic because you just haven't seen it yet.
It's also interesting to me that the farther you go along the game, I feel like there are more opportunities for self-reflection.
Mm-hmm. You had to do the Tessie thing again where you're just riding on the dinosaur. Yeah. Like, yeah.
So at this point, you drop down into the cave. You're in the Land of the Lost.
Yeah.
There are dinosaurs everywhere. Weird fountains, more tenda. A tenda that aren't shy, by the way, which I thought was kind of funny.
Well, and they even said something like, hey, we broke off from that other village because we disagreed with them or something like that.
Ooh, drama.
Yeah, that's so there's a weird like civil war between the tenda.
The prequel DLC for Earthbound.
And there's a clever visual trick where they basically make your party like a much, much smaller, pixelated.
Loved that. Loved it.
And the enemies are normal size, so it makes them seem huge. And so you're fighting these enormous dinosaurs.
It's such a clever idea. Like, that they were clever enough to think, oh, you know what? Let's change the perspective completely.
Yeah.
And make everything really tiny so we can use our pixels to our own advantage.
Yep.
It's pretty cool.
And then it gives you, because Earthbound, you have to like use your imagination during the fights because the fights are basically static pictures of things. But so many of the dinosaurs' attacks are like the dinosaur stomps its huge foot and like Paula dodges out of the way. And so it's like you're kind of like scurrying around them like Shadow of the Colossus style, like as you're fighting these huge dinosaurs. Like it just, that visual outside the battle helps you visualize what's going on inside the battle in like a way more vivid way than the actual text alone could do.
Also, just the design of the dinosaurs themselves are really cool.
It's like the total fantasy dinosaur.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Like what a kid would draw.
Exactly.
Like Chomposaurus and stuff. Yeah. Like, come on. Again, another reason, all in his imagination. Just saying.
Yeah.
You find another talking head who again breaks the fourth wall, tells you, here are all the things, you're going to fight this guy, Gygus.
Yep.
You need to go to the Fire Spring, it's to the southwest. Go forth.
Yeah. This was one of the caves you can go into, but you can't really do anything yet. You go in and you see this weird kind of like tendril coming out of the ground. I believe that's one of the pieces of music that samples All You Need Is Love by the Beatles.
Really?
Because you start and it goes like dun, 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 and then it like kind of loops, right? And so like it's basically, and there's a couple others time where I think there's at least one other Beatles song.
Well, there's nothing
songs
you can do in that area, right?
No, you just kind of hang out and get freaked out by the weird music.
Will you be able to go into there?
This will loop back around to something that happens later on.
It's not just a like Beatles break.
No, no, it's just like it's a preview of something else that is happening. But yeah, and then after that, you find, like you were saying, there's another cave, and this is pretty much where we're wrapping up. So there is the final melody. Yeah. And you're basically inside of a volcano fighting a bunch of real just assholes. Just like, this is, I mean, this battle was hard.
They shield themselves before you get all of your abilities off.
Yeah.
It's tough.
It was definitely worthy of, like, the eighth dungeon in a JRPG. Like, there's just a lot of, there's a lot of enemies there. But once you finish the sanctuary, all of your, all the enemies run away from you.
Yeah.
And so you can get greens on them every time, and like your level just starts to skyrocket after a while.
Yeah, I should go back and farm them up.
Yeah.
I sort of just went through thinking that they would be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That stupid dog too.
Carbon dog.
And then all of a sudden it like diamondizes itself and like, God, I was so, I was like, oh man, this battle's going really, really well. I can't believe it. And then like, oh, it's almost dead.
This guy's ass. When I finished that battle, I think I pulled it off because Pooh would do his magnet get just a bit, like enough to do another spell.
There's another star or whatever.
Yeah, like everyone was real low on psi power.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and then at the end, like you were saying, you have to go collect the rest of the sanctuary, or you have to go collect the rest of the melodies, which I haven't done yet.
Nope.
Because I clearly missed that one in Dalam. And we're on the road to the end of the game at this point.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting real close.
Yeah, and I think this is why there's all these moments of being, like, self-referential and reflective, and people talking about, like, oh, you're almost there. Have another song, right? The guy telling you, you know, you need to get all of these eight things. Write this down. He tells you to go get a pen. It down. I like sort of being reminded. I don't think I would want this in most games, but it feels right to be reminded that the game is almost over. Because I think at this point, if you're still playing Earthbound, you've understood now that this game is special.
Yeah.
And it wants to remind you of that before you're done. Like, hey, take a moment to appreciate everything that is going on right now.
Yep.
Because it's not going to last forever. You're going to be done with it. And let's be honest, you're probably not going to play Earthbound for another, you know, 15 years or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and also it fits into the rest of the game, which is a, you're always reflecting. Every person you talk to is thinking about, like, people just kind of on the streets will say, oh, I wonder if I could have been a chef instead of, you know, being a business guy or whatever. Like, everyone is, like, looking back. It's a very nostalgic game. And so this is, like, at the end, they're like, okay, think about all of the things you did. And here's even a little thing about Ness's backstory.
I mean, that's why this game lends itself so well to these types of conversations.
Yeah.
Because it is a game about nostalgia.
Yeah.
For something that the creator never experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just opens itself up to fill with your own sense of nostalgia, right?
Yeah. Everyone, it's probably a mirror to what people are seeing, but everyone can at least understand the broader themes, like you mentioned earlier, of like expanding your world, like one little journey at a time.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that I feel like this in games like Earthbound or Bloodborne, where in The Lord of the Rings, where Sam is like, if I take one more step, that's the furthest I've ever been from home.
Yes, you know? That is a great, yes, like, that is an awesome, perfect analogy.
Yeah, because like Earthbound is like that. It's like, oh my God, I'm crossing the ocean now? Like, this is farther than I've ever been from home. Yeah. Like, what is going on? Like, every single thing is like, this is way further than I've ever been before.
They haven't done this yet, but I think what would be really dramatic is if you lost your ability to teleport.
That would be.
Oh, you can never go home again.
Yeah.
Like, there comes a point where you can't teleport home now.
Or Ness and his friends have to go into the West. The age of man, the age of Ness is ending, and the age of man is done.
Yeah, exactly right.
Oh man. Alright, that was a hefty one, but we covered a big chunk of the game. Mechanically dense, thematically dense too.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? What are you thinking for the ending? What are you looking for?
I don't want that to be a dream, despite my insistence that it probably is a dream.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I want another coffee moment at the end of the game.
Mm.
Like, I want something that's like, and again, you haven't, we'll talk about this next time, but there's a moment that happens when you get all eight of these, what are they called, melodies?
Mm-hmm.
That makes me think that, like, maybe the game has a chance of going really serious again,
mm-hmm.
in, like, a really dark, kind of uncomfortable way.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of looking forward to that. I hope it happens. Again, I have no idea what's going to happen. Anything can happen. It could be really silly and bizarre, or it could be good, but, you know, when I think of coming-of-age stories, and I think this is clearly fits within that genre,
yeah.
they often end with these sort of pivotal moments of loss
mm-hmm.
and understanding. a separation between friends. I mean, even if we want to carry on the Samwise Gamgee moment, right? Mm-hmm. When Frodo leaves Middle Earth or that section of Middle Earth, and Sam has to stay behind, like, that's a very significant moment. And that separation, that feeling of, like, you know, you've gone on this adventure, but this adventure has to end, and you might have to separate and go your own way, right? Yeah. Like, from his Dark Materials to, you know, Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim, whatever. Like, children's books and coming-of-age stories have these in them. So,
yeah.
I think it'll be interesting if Nessa's like, hey, Pooh, you know, bye. Bye, Jeff. Bye, Paula.
Yeah. I want you to hang out.
I'm just going to go home now. Yeah. Like, how do you go... How does Ness go home again after seeing the world, right? Yeah. Especially when you know that at this point he's still a kid and he's still in an adult world where people will just see him as a kid, right?
Yeah.
And he's in the middle of fucking fighting dinosaurs and he calls home and the mom treats him like he's just down at the park eating a sundae, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you convey the childhood experience of confronting something that is an adult thing and not being recognized as having gone through that transformation? I don't know if the game is going to address that at all, but I find that a really interesting question, and it feels like it has the opportunity to explore that in the end of this game. Or maybe in Earthbound 2. Or
Well, yeah. I mean, Mother 3, Mother right? 3, like, technically this is Mother 2, but, like, I'm really looking forward to this, like, sprint to the end. There's some cool stuff that's going to happen. I think that's it. So we will, it's TBD when we're going to finish it, but we'll definitely announce it on the next couple shows, give people plenty of time to catch up.
Yep.
And then do another probably final show on Earthbound.
Yeah, probably final. I think we generally chose to get this far because we knew that the end would come soon.
Yeah.
And we'd be able to talk about the experience as a whole.
Yeah.
Because I think that like those moments of reflections in the game, it will behoove us to talk a little bit about the grand experiment.
So we're just going to make some special tea, drink it.
Drink it with our magic cake.
Turn on the microphones and we'll just see what happens.
Hey man, it is California. You can get the most magical cakes here.
The most magic cakes. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our tiny little home. Mm. We will recognize all the effort that you go through to listen to us.
Yeah.
If you want to go a little bit extra out of the way, iTunes and Stitcher is where you can find more of our podcasts. We encourage you to give us a review on those.
Right. And until next time, everyone, thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Fuzzy pickles.
Fuzzy pickles. Fuzzy pickles.